This is the Integrate Intelligently podcast from CADtalk Software, a podcast about the people, programs, and processes that come together to make businesses successful. At CADtalk, we're a software integration company, but we believe this idea of intelligent integration goes much deeper than software. On this episode, we discuss CADtalk core value number 3. Fast and focused, and how that mindset impacts our company and the manufacturers we work with. Now, let's hear from the Brickler brothers, Jeff and Scott.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Integrate Intelligently podcast. I'm Jeff Brickler, Chief Revenue Officer at CADtalk. I'm accompanied by my brother and fearless leader, Scott Brickler, CEO of CADtalk. Scott, what have you been up to lately? I mean, what's been going on? I think today we had our all call with our team to discuss kind of Q2 and initiatives for the upcoming quarter. What's been going on with you besides work?
We did the Q2 call. We have some family in this week. My wife's cousin and their family, they're kind of visiting and hitting the local amusement parks and stuff like that. And then we did the announce. I've also been doing that weight loss journey, as you know, from like announced that on the meeting today about, and then some down like 30 pounds this quarter, looking for another 30 pounds, 25 pounds for next quarter. And then I'm actually doing another Spartan race at the beginning here in about a month. So another 10K. So hopefully it may be a short podcast if I don't make it through that one. So
might be a short-lived podcast if you don't want. Might be the Jeff Show. Might just be the Jeff Show. It's morbid. Right. We shouldn't joke about that. But yeah. No, that's.
I feel confident. I feel confident.
Right. You'll be okay. All right. That's funny. Probably think people go, what are you guys talking about? It's crazy. Yeah, I mean, it's good. No, it's good. It's good to see that you're doing that. You tend to like to do those, or you've been doing those initiatives, those races. I'm a much more boring guy. I'm a very routine individual. I get up every morning and I exercise and I just kind of get it done and I don't even think about it. I thrive much better when things are even keel and just kind of the same thing every day. It's kind of boring, but not exciting, but it definitely, keeps me on track. So,
oh yeah. That's actually a great topic for a future episode. We should dig into that. Like how we're different that way and how it's really worked for both of us in our lives, because that's actually a cool topic. Obviously that's the topic today, but I thought about that the other day about how we kind of learn from each other with our different styles, and I think that would be a great topic.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah. What's also funny is that, you and I are brothers and we've had different backgrounds, but you and I think we're very much alike in a lot of ways. And I think a lot of other people, when they see us, they typically say like, we're just different in so many ways that they go, mm-hmm. Man, you guys are just so different. And I don't see that big difference, but I guess to the outside world, it is a big difference. I think we think a lot of the same. I think our life experiences have been different leading up. I mean, of course, we had childhood together and then, but our college and high school years, we didn't even live together for a while. And some of those challenges of growing up and being apart from each other, having different life experiences. But when I look at us, I think about when we have conversations like this and I talk to you, I think, oh, well, even though we've had different life experiences, backgrounds, we still seem to think similarly, which is funny to hear people say that we're mm-hmm. so different.
Yeah, I think you can start with us, with kind of a similar thinking, and then just have it manifest differently in the personality and things like that. It's like, it's definitely like people get to know us more. They're like, oh, I could see the commonality now, but when you just kind of have the surface level. Like I talk fast and you talk a little slower. I mean, like all those surface level things kind of people know this off the bat, right?
It would just be funny. You used to give me all kinds of grief for having these pregnant pauses where I would stop and
it worked.
Think. And I think about, I do it again. Yeah. I know that President Obama got a lot of grief for that too. That was like a big joke for him. Anybody impersonates him, right? He has that real long kind of the cadence of, pauses, and it's people joke about it. So I think about that versus you versus me, where, like you said, your mind and your mouth go a mile a minute, whereas me, sometimes I'm a little more deliberate or slow to speak or slow to articulate what I want to say. But it's funny.
It works better on the podcast. Right. Your style.
Well, does work better. Well, I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
The gift of AI to fix me. Like, so people who are listening to this now, it's much, much worse. Right.
That's funny. Yeah. It's funny how these, I think we, you know, kind of off topic a bit, but, that would be an interesting topic, I think, to discuss kind of our backgrounds, how we see, you know, how they play off each other and how we tend to complement each other, rather than, fight against each other. So.
Absolutely.
So before we get into it, I just want to make sure, you know, articulate or to talk about, remind everybody, you know, who we are. So this podcast is sponsored by CAD Talk. It's an integration platform for engineering softwares like design softwares and PDMs, PLM systems, and popular ERP systems. And so we've been around since 2006, and Scott's, of course, the founder, and I came on in 2015. And you know, happy to be working with my brother to build this company together, but also to have that, you know, build our relationship. Because of course, anytime you're working together on something, whether it's with friends or coworkers, or especially for, I think for family, if you can do it, I know it's for some families it's hard, but for me, it's really great to be here to with my brother to be able to work on something together. I know that our family included had a lot of trouble doing that. And so for me, it's really exciting that we can share the microphone. We can be here to work together, you know, to try to build something together. It's kind of like, you know, family building a house together, right?
It's cool when it works out. I mean, it's just, it really does. It really is. I mean, I think it's been and people have mentioned that many times in our family that like that our dynamic is so good. And that's not the deal, normally the case with a lot of families.
That is. Yeah. No, I must admit, I think about very fortunate the relationship you and I have and how well that works together. Because I know when people find out we're brothers and they say you work together, and people always, the comment is, I couldn't work with my brother. And I always think, well, I don't understand why. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's like, it's worked out really well. It's like, it's been a cool, I can't even believe it's been 9 years now. It's crazy that we've been working together. So yeah, it's long.
Yeah, it is. It is hard to believe, you know, it's that age old joke about the older you get, the faster the years go, right? I remember when I was younger, right? You think, time just goes so slowly, at least it feels that way. And then, now you're like, in my mid 40s, you know, the second half of my 40s, it feels like my time goes so fast.
Yeah. I think it's because the time is, you have longer life to, it's like relative time thing, right? Like your longer your life is, right? Type thing. Yeah. And I totally agree. Same thing. Yeah.
So we, you know, the first couple of episodes, we talked about, of course, our tagline, Integrate Intelligently, what that meant to us. We talked about some of our values. And today, I think we're going to just continue to discuss those values and how they impact us and the company and like our view of them. So today's really is fast and focused, another alliterative motto or alliterative value, which really kind of goes back to the emphasis you put on both doing something swift, so swift action, mm-hmm. but also doing it strategically. It reminds me, this is getting that fast and focused also reminds me of a famous quote from, of course, some Latin quote I'm going to pull out of here from the Emperor Augustus. And the Latin is festina lente, or make haste slowly. It's the same idea, I think, of fast and focused, which is, you know, get on to doing something, but get on to it, like get to doing it, but doing it deliberately, smartly, mm-hmm. with that type of focus. And I think we try to find people, of course, that work with us and here that balance, because typically you have you can have two kinds of people or two types of kind of personalities. People who are really fast to act and will do something, just get out there and do it. Break everything and to see where the chips may fall. And then people who have what I would call paralysis by analysis, and having working with a lot of engineers and software and engineering and software engineering as far as mechanical and other types of engineering, typically much more deliberate and slow to make changes. Mm-hmm. And so truly trying to marry those two things together, that balanced approach, that what I would call hurry slowly is like taking action and doing something, but doing it in a deliberate and smart way, not to get too caught up on one side or the other. I really like that balanced approach. What does that fast and focused mean? You came up with it. What does it mean to you? What was the driving factor that made you think about that as one of the values we wanted to, you know, hire for, but mm-hmm. also emblematic of who we are?
Absolutely. I like all good things, that's, I borrowed that from someone else, right? I read a book years ago, or it was actually a blog post from Joel Spolsky, who's like, he used to have a blog post called Joel on Software. And if people don't know who Joel is, he's actually the guy who founded Stack Overflow, which is a huge site that people know about. It's probably what he's most known for. And he also had a company, he also worked for Microsoft, and he actually was the product manager who created like Excel macros, like the original set, which a lot of people use, things like that. So, you know, kind of a pretty, his work is quite pervasive. And he had a great blog about how to create software companies. This is like in the early 2000s and things like that. And he talked about, and his hiring scheme was smart and gets things done. That was his, especially for developers, because, and what I found was, and you already talked, you kind of alluded to it earlier, which is that people can be smart, but they can't do anything. They can be like, they can basically not get out of their own way and never make any progress. They just constantly thinking there's a better way. They make perfect the enemy of good. And we see this a lot with our customers too. A lot of our customers do this because they're engineering minds, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's also the other guy who just, he just runs full tilt into the wall over and over again, hoping to break through. You know, it's like running east looking for a sunset, right? He's running real fast, but he's not going to see the sunset, right? So the idea is you want to get somebody who has a good mixture of both, right? And somebody who's smart, who approaches, you know, has a good strategy, but he just also moves the ball forward. He gets things done. Smart gets things done. And I thought, well, heck, that's good for anybody. Like, why does it have to be developers? You know? So it was a great model or great frame for like hiring developers. And then I just kind of applied it to everything. And I was like, well, you really want to do that with just as a value. It really is a value. Like when do you make sure that you're conscious of the fact that like, I'm going to try to spend the time to figure out what I should do. And then get about getting it done. You know, at that point, because, you know, you spend a lot of time just, you know, getting, oh, I could watch one more video, or I could read another blog post and just go on and on and on. So, you know, mañana, right? Just tomorrow. So that's where it comes from. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good, I'm going to dig in a little bit to like maybe mm-hmm. myself and maybe you too, is that I know I've suffered from in the past, like over analysis. Mm-hmm. We as humans are never balanced, right? I know myself isn't balanced. As I get older, I try to find the balance. When I was younger, and I went through different periods of being more fast than focused, and sometimes more focused than fast, right? And it's just always this, you've got these waves in your life, it's kind of chaos. You go up and down, back and forth or whatever. It's just human nature. That consistency is hard to hit. You have these large amplitudes. Large, you know, differences in different parts of your life. And part of that's just growing up and learning. But how have you dealt with getting more to that balance, right? That hitting that balance of fast and focused together? Because I'm sure, you know, maybe you have anecdotes where you are more focused than fast or vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of good frames about how to think about this. I think one of my favorite things, you've heard me say it a million times, is like his favorite thing. It's like one of my constant struggles is like the kind of the dichotomy of how do you know if something is not working or just not working yet, you know? And that kind of ties into this as well, because it's really hard to know, like, have I done enough research to then make the decision? Have I done enough thing, you know, or if I just haven't, or I haven't done enough, you know, like, or is this thing I'm trying to do, is it still working, or am I going to, I know that one of the things that, like, Alex Hormozi talks about is the, you know, from the Matrix, is like the woman in the red dress. Are you getting distracted by something that's shiny over here and you're not moving forward? And the same thing with fast, the focus is like, I think the way that the least of frame I use lately, which is a lot, which is goes back to like, if I'm consuming information or I'm trying to make a decision about something. And a lot of times what I find which causes the inaction is there's something uncomfortable or something that's causing me to avoid it. And then that's the, and that, and I'm turning what's considered, which is typically a two-way door, using, this is from Bezos. He talks about one-way and two-way doors, like things, decisions that you, once you make them, you can't undo them. And the decisions that you can do them, but you, you know, but you come back and you can change them later. And I'm always like, when am I turning two-way doors into one-way doors? And usually I'm doing that when I'm avoiding something and I'm trying to, you know, it's a hard conversation or it's a decision that I just don't really want to make, or I'm scared about the outcome and I really don't want to know. And then, so really asking yourself that question, you're like, okay, do I need to know more about this? Or do I actually just need to do a hard decision? Is there a hard decision I'm avoiding or a hard action I don't want to do? You know, it's like you can read about working out all day, but when you, you know, like it doesn't do you a whole lot of good until you start doing the, you start doing the thing. And then you're like, I really just hate split squats. It makes my legs hurt, you know, but no amount of reading about split squats is going to get your legs built, right? He's got to do the thing. And I think that's one of the things that like I look at now is the balance. It's like, if I feel like I'm like, yeah, you're just avoiding the thing, that you're avoiding the hard thing. You're doing it. And I just kind of do that kind of reality check. Am I just doing this because I want to, am I doing this for entertainment or a way to avoid, or am I doing this because, you know, I actually need to learn something new? Because a lot of times you're just reaffirming the thing you already knew. And a lot of times things, knowledge is, you already have the knowledge. You just need to remember. You just need a reminder, you know?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, sometimes if you're, I mean, obviously you and I both kind of pride ourselves on being smart or and hardworking, and I think sometimes when you're smart, when you want to, you can convince yourself that you need more information, or you need to study more, or you need to learn more, read another book, or do another thing, or oh, I'm not sure about this. I need to find out more. And the reality is that you don't really need that. You know, I wasn't big into sports as a kid. You know, I was all much more academic, and then sometimes it just takes doing the thing, right? There's like, it's not that complicated. It's just work. I mean, it is at the end of the day. It's like when I was learning languages or Latin, I used to do the work, which was like get flashcards, really boring, and just write on one side the word and the other side, and just I used to do them. Was it the most efficient way? No. Was it the best way? No. Were there better ways? Yeah, I didn't know them though. So what did I do? I just spent hours and hours and hours using these flashcards, learning the words. I've learned 5-6 different languages that way. And it's just like, sometimes you just gotta, and it's not a mind, it's, there's something to figure out at some point, right? There's just action. You just gotta
take the action. And people think like research, people always like, well, it feels like work, right? I'm going to do this research and I'm getting all this work I'm doing. I'm researching. I'm making sure I get the right decision.
Feels like progress. Yeah. It feels like progress. Like, I'm doing something. Progress.
Yeah. And like one thing I noticed about, like, this is interesting too, is when you talk about fast and focused, sometimes the highest achievers are the ones that are the worst about getting things done. It's interesting about that. It's like, one thing I noticed, we used to hire a lot of co-ops for development and stuff. And then I used to be co-op, so I like to support that program. And you had these ones that were like straight A students and stuff, and they would struggle actually to get things done. And so everything they went through in college, they were able to understand everything about the code. Like they were like, they could understand the code really well. Like, oh, write this thing that, you know, orders pizzas or whatever the simple, it's a very simple scope. And then they come in and they get into a code base like CAD Talk that's just massive, right? I mean, it's just so big. And they proceed to then try to download how it all works into their brain so they can start working on it. And they realize really quickly that isn't possible, like in a short amount of time, right? It takes a long time to kind of get an understanding of how all this stuff works. But they end up being on the one side of the spectrum, which is they're smart, but they can't get anything done. Because they can't deal with the uncertainty of not understanding all of it before they start. And in most things in life, I mean, the world is very complicated, very, very complicated, lots of things to learn. And you won't know how everything works, but sometimes you just got to start. And the example I always use was this, like, when I was telling the guys about the code base, I used to use this thing called a dark room analogy. And I said, and I think you've used different ones because you used to teach, so that you probably have a better analogy than this than I do. But the idea that, like, think of the code base as being this dark room and you have no idea what it looks like. But all you know is you have a book of matches and some kindling, and there's no way to turn the light on, but you can create a little fire in one of the corners. And then you create that fire and you get to see a little bit more of the room. And then you can kind of go to the edge of the fire or the light that it created and maybe build another fire. And think of that as like knowledge. You learn a little piece and then you learn another piece that links to that. And then eventually you can build enough fires where you can see what the room looks like. And now you understand. And then you get, the action that you take with that understanding is much more efficient. But you had to take a bunch of inefficient action to get that room lit up. Does that make sense? And that was kind of the analogy I used with a lot of the co-ops when they started, and it seemed to help. It seemed to help them, you know, take action. Yeah.
Yeah. Similar when I was teaching foreign language, and you know, I had students who wanted to, like, well, how does this work? How does this language work? You're like, it's not really, or, you know, let me learn all the grammar first and learn all the rules. It's like, it's too big. It's too big, too complicated. You can't do it. You just got to start on something small. You're not going to understand it. Not until you do a lot of it, will you begin to kind of fill in it's like a picture, right? Like, you're painting a little piece of that picture kind of all around, right? Like kind of those, paint by numbers. You don't know what the picture looks like until you start to fill in all the pieces, and you go, then it begins to have a shape to it. But you can't just look at it and go, oh, I know what that is. It does take,
oh yeah,
take that. And sometimes, you know, you can try to think your way out of it. Like, you know, like, oh, I'll focus on it, I'll figure it out. It's like, no, you just gotta get in there and do something, and it'll be horribly inefficient probably. Yeah. And it'll might be boring, but it is really sometimes it's the fastest way to get the understanding you're looking for.
It's that crappy first draft concept, right? Like, I think one of the things, like, school, I think sometimes doesn't do this. Maybe it does do it well. I just had a bad experience, but like, they seem to like reward getting it right the first time and not the process of like being, and so they've kind of trained the people to not want to fail at first. Right. So, and a lot of times, a lot of learning, especially at scale or in real life, requires a bunch of failing, you know, and
a lot of iteration.
So they're almost like, well, I want to learn everything and understand it all because I don't want to fail and I can't deal with that first failing. Right. Like, there's another story I had about the, when I was young, I wanted to make movies. I wanted to be a movie director and all this stuff. Yeah. And I really wanted to make movies. We had that Super 8 camera. So now we're going to date myself now with the camera. Right. And they had a Super 8 camera, and I finally got the film for the camera. And so I got the film, but I was like, well, I got to wait until I learn everything about filmmaking before I make my movie. Cause I don't want to waste that film. Cause then, you know, it was, that film was expensive. I don't want to waste the film. And then it was like, and I read books, and then I look at that and I watch movies, and I would think, man, I'm doing, like, look at all this work I'm doing. I'm like learning how to make movies. I'm like, literally, I'm learning everything there is to do about it. And it was like, I don't know, 5-6 years later, I was moving somewhere, and then I looked in this drawer and that film was still in there, never been used. And I was just like, wow, like, what a complete waste. Like, I've been better off, like, at least making a crappy movie. And then I would have moved forward and I would learn something, and then I could have got some more film, and then I could, you know, done the next thing. But I was so afraid of like making a mistake or making a bad film or wasting that money that I never actually did the thing.
Yeah.
And I remember when this ties into CAD Talk a little bit. Like, when I started CAD Talk, I remember learning how to program, and I kept thinking, well, I got to learn how all this language worked. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to write this thing. You know, maybe this code won't be that great the first time, but at least I'll learn something. And I remembered, because I didn't want to have the film in the drawer problem happen to me again and wish I had done something.
Right.
So I just took action. And then, you know, over time we that code wasn't great. So I was thinking about this, the version that we're on now is the third iteration of CAD Talk. Took me 3 times to get it right.
Right.
And that was okay. Right. And that's kind of what teaching people to be okay with that is part of the process. I think almost unlearning that school kind of thing of like, you can't fail the first time type thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, failure is a big part of it. It's like micro, it's a bunch of micro failures. I did the same thing when I was in school, as I took forever to write papers because I didn't like the process of writing. Because to your point, I didn't want to waste all that time on an idea that didn't go anywhere. Because again, you know, like you said, in school, you're going to submit this thing and you're going to get a grade. That's it. It's over. And it's kind of without saying you submitted this thing, goes, yeah, this sucks. Or this is not great. Mm-hmm. Or here, these parts are great. On that, you just didn't get an opportunity to iterate and work on it like that. Whereas in life, it's much more that way. How does this fast and focused, like, where do you see that work in manufacturing companies? Are manufacturers typically fast? Are they typically focused? Are they are not? Or where could they learn from that?
Yeah. Generally, I mean, one of the things about manufacturing is it's a cornerstone industry. So it's like, you think about everything that's being made, manufacturing probably is never going to go away. We're going to be making stuff. You know, as long as there's humans who want to consume stuff, we'll be making stuff. So, but it tends to be a more conservative industry that's slow to move, especially to adopt technology and things like that. So you think about the software industry or tech, everything moves so quickly because everything evolves so fast, right? But like in manufacturing, they tend to do things until competition drives into the other direction. So they do things that are proven and they work. So they tend to be more focused than fast, right? You know, and they experiment. Now, like, I think about even all the, you know, think about the history of manufacturing and kind of how all this worked. It's like, especially like how things are made today. I mean, a lot of innovation and even the way software is built, things like that, come from innovations in the manufacturing industry. And like, one of the things, a little history lesson on this is like, people think about Toyota and the Japanese way and things like that in manufacturing. And they're always like, well, the Japanese really have this thing figured out and they were able to do, and the Chinese can really do a lot. They're so fast building things. And like, you know, how did that happen? And it was funny because like, you know, the history is that there was, after World War II, that Japan was like decimated, their economy was decimated and everything like that. And they were trying to, you know, rebuild again. And they actually, I believe that they sent this guy named Deming, who was like the father of industrial engineering or that type of, or manufacturing engineering. And he actually was, none of the big automotive companies here in the States would listen to him about his manufacturing theories, these new ideas, these new, you know, innovations. So he actually went to Japan to help with the rebuild, with the restructuring. And then the Japanese loved him because they just bought into everything he said. And then they actually implemented it. So they were focused. They did the work, and with his thing, and they adopted it, and it really kind of fit into their culture, which is this continuous improvement kind of, you know, culture and perfection and things. And that's how they were able to overcome, like how they were able to basically beat the American manufacturing during the 70s, like mostly in the 80s, when they were able to, like Toyota and things like that. The Toyota way, all that ironically came from an American who came up with this idea, but who was very fast and thought of really cool things. But the manufacturing tend to be slow here until there was so much competition about quality. Now today, like the quality that we enjoy in manufacturing and all of that is due to that Deming and that idea. But it's just that, so it's always like it is. It's when you think about, like, you can be faster in tech because you're just moving around ones and zeros, right? And there's not a lot of cost to that. But when you're cutting metal, mm-hmm. you tend to be a little more conservative. There's real dollars going out the door. So it's, you totally make sense that they would do that, there's another example. You gotta have a good balance with that, you know, based on the situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that we keep coming back to this concept of balance, right? Fast and focused is kind of mm-hmm. that balance. I mean, how do manufacturing companies find that balance, right? Between fast and focused. I mean, because to your point, cutting metal has real implications, doing it wrong has real implications. Whereas in software, well, even in software to a certain extent, right? I mean, now companies use software, they can't really not have it. We can't live our lives without a phone or the internet. Reality, right? It's the truth. How do manufacturing companies marry the two, right? If they're typically focused and they don't tend to move as fast, how do they do that? Where are the areas where they could do that?
Well, I think that the Japanese did a great job. They think this idea of a Kaizen, which is basically Japanese for continuous improvement, right? And they structure it around. So instead of doing like R&D or hoping that it just happens that they do an improvement or they try to get better or they try to learn and things like that, or be more fast. I guess you keep the fast and focus kind of vernacular. They literally build it into the, into their process. So if you're like, well, if I'm assuming I'm going to have a certain amount of R&D, or I'm going to do these Kaizen events that do an improvement, or I'm going to listen to the guys on the shop floor who have ideas and implement at least one of them. And I figure that into my budgets and my planning, it's much easier to systemize that into your everyday work, as opposed to trying to make it an event. And this idea of an event versus a system is also an interesting one to double click on. It's like, we see this with customers too, who try to do something or make a change, and that change is more, they treat it like an event that's only going to happen once, as opposed to something that you plan for and you do iteratively. And that, I think that's the way, like the best manufacturing companies I've seen, they make that continuous improvement, or actually best any company, it doesn't even have to be manufacturing, they make the continuous improvement more of a system that they just continue to follow and repeat, not an event they do once in a while. And that's the way to do it, because the event is very costly, and it's like, it's out of your routine. Mm-hmm. It's not the normal things that you do, but if you plan it into your routine and things, you can kind of plan for it in your business, and it just becomes part of what you do. And then you're basically putting innovation and change as part of your process, as opposed to being some event that you only do once every 5 years and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we even see it. This is much more, in the nuts and bolts of like our customers and what they do, but we even see it on customers. They buy our software, buy a new system, right, that we're going to work with. It's like, it's this big event, it's a big bang, right? Bang. We're going to do this. And then we're off and running. We're going to get back to work. You know, we're going to have this big surge, and then do it and be done. It's akin to like, I'm going to go to university, I'm going to study, I'm going to get my degree, and I'm going to never learn again. Or yeah. I'm going to go on a 6 month diet, right? And I'm going to go hard keto or whatever, right? Whatever you're going to do. I'm going to exercise. I'm going to do CrossFit. We get jacked or whatever the thing is. Yeah. And then you're just like, I'm going to be done with that. It's just like, that's not sustainable, right? I mean, yes, you can do that for some time. It's a big cost. It's a huge cost. Even probably a bigger cost than this, to your point. It's kind of an iterative, slower, you know, it's more of a process that you're trying to do. It's like, okay, that improvement is a process. This built in, it is that kind of fast and focused, or that make haste slowly, is like, get on to doing it, but don't make it into this just short thing. Is just keep it going. That's, you know, slow and steady wins the race kind of mentality of continuously kind of working at it, chipping away at it. That's going to lead to long-term improvements. Whereas a one-time thing typically just falls off.
Think about that. Like the one-time thing, that mentality would be like saying, I'm going to have a meal so good, I'll never have to eat again.
Right. That's what it is.
It's kind of ridiculous, right? I mean, I think I'm stealing that from Hormozy, but it really is a good concept of like, as if you're going to arrive and this thing will be done. You know, and I don't have to come. Yeah. And it's like, that isn't how things work. It isn't how things work. I mean, so if you think about like improvement as just being this part of what you do, or like that's what goes back to the other, you know, which is is reinvention. But just the idea of like looking at something and then acting upon it and being okay. Because like, I think what we got here is that people tend to be, you know, slow and you know, scattered, right? So you kind of have like, how do you get out of that? Is to take action. And what keeps you from taking action is fear, the cost.
You can't change it, or you break it, or it won't. Yeah, exactly.
And then by making these things more systemized, you remove the fear of which causes the inaction. Like, because you basically have more reps of getting it wrong. I mean, even like with project manager, talk about like project manager, was an interesting thing. We were talking about product management. And I was like, I had a paralysis analysis moment with this. We were trying to get a roadmap in place and things that we had a roadmap, but it wasn't great. And it was like, and I kept thinking, well, I don't know exactly how long this thing's going to take. And I don't know this. And I got like really into the details because I'm an engineer and that's what we do. And then we actually got a consultant that came in and helped us. And he's just like, well, you got to do a swag. Like, you just guess at a number And if you don't, you know, anybody doesn't know what swag is, it's, you know, crappy wild ass guess, but different, the different ass there, but like, so,
right.
Yeah, but it's, that's just what it is. So you put a swag out there and then you pick a date and then you basically course correct, until you, and you course correct based on that date that you guessed. And so it's very much to the kind of overused analogy of the plane takes off in New York, it's flying to LA. And people don't realize that the plane is off course 90% of the time, but they course correct all the time, you know, but, you know, and then they're actually able to tell you within a few minutes when it's going to land. And they probably didn't get it right the first time, you know, but they guessed. Right. And they went, and then they measured and they got back. And that's the thing. It's being okay with an incorrect guess, an incorrect result, or a bad, crappy first draft. I mean, it really is learning that method. I think that's usually the hindrance that keeps people in paralysis analysis, or analysis paralysis. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that manufacturing companies can't do that because of the cost, or is it just that same thing with we have everywhere, just the fear? By cost, I mean the real cost, you said cutting metal, right? You don't want to make a mistake there because
that can be
very costly.
You think about companies grow and they, I mean, when they first start out, right, especially in manufacturing or any business, you're cost conscious about everything. So this is something that's interesting, is like, maybe not like a little bit off topic, but still interesting, is that when companies grow, the things that you did to get to a certain stage don't work in the next stage. So what happens is they get like, I'm like, well, I just need to make these parts, or I need to do this thing in order to make a profit so I can sustain myself for the next thing. Right. And then, so you get in this like cost cutting mode of everything, and then you cut out anything that's completely that you find to be superfluous. Right. And that's actually a good strategy when we have little money. Mm-hmm. It turns into a bad strategy as you get mature, because now somebody's going to figure out how to make it a little bit cheaper than you, and they're going to beat you out, and right. they do all those types of things. So you have to then put what feels like a wasteful thing or a superfluous thing back into your process, which is like, I'm going to have to take on a little bit more cost here to figure out how to make the thing better tomorrow, and right. build that into my process. And what happens is they kind of save that up. You see this with like ERP implementations or software. Like, how many times have we seen like people being on the same software for like 20 years, you know, and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And like, I mean, I think Y2K was a big one because they were forced to change. Like, there was like, because some of these companies have been on the same software since the 70s. And then finally, like, some external event had to happen to get them to move. And, yeah. But the reason that is because if you're always like, well, it always worked in the past, I'm going to keep doing it and it should last forever. And like anybody, like if you're in the marketing world, you know that like the same marketing doesn't work forever. It has right. a shelf life. Right. So what you have to do is like, they have to change their strategy as they evolve. This is true of any business, but manufacturing as well. From what you did when you first started isn't the way to sustain it at the next level. And it's, right. and know kind of when those stages happen, you know, and then and recognize them and know when to say, oh, okay, I need to, you know, take a little bit more. I need to put some R&D budget in place. I need to do this thing. And it'd be really cool to have like a model for that. But you can model that with the community. One of the things that you can learn from a community is like, when's the right stage to start doing that, you know, and these types of things mm-hmm. and learn that kind of thing. But I think that's what happens. They just kind of keep doing what they did when they started, acting as if they're a startup, and now they're, you know, $100 million company and they're just not investing, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you see that in software. I'm sure you see it in manufacturing. It's not, you know, what's interesting, or I always thought, was one of the reasons I enjoyed Latin, or like when I studied, was that ancient languages or different cultures even, was that people are all the same. So if you're in manufacturing, you're in software, you're in teaching, it doesn't matter, because humans, right? We as humans are all the same, regardless of where we are on the planet or what we're doing in our careers. It's like we have the same kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. So to your point, like we're all struggling with that kind of behavior of resisting change, right? Resisting improvement, resist saying I'm going to make small changes and iterate and do that over and over again, because we want to have, I think, just in our DNA is like, we want to have consistency. So we don't have to worry about it, right? We just put that over here. Oh, that's over here. I don't have to worry about that. I could just, I think evolutionarily speaking, mm-hmm. our minds are even set up that way, right? If you can just like, you meet somebody and go, oh, put that person in a box, or, ooh, this is safe, or, you know, you want to be able to automate or to turn that off. And so it's hard to be fast and focused, or hard to be that continuous improvement, yeah, because you want to essentially, you just want to set it and forget it.
Yeah. I mean, an evolution or mm-hmm. you know, whatever, like everything in our biology wants that, right? It wants to save time. So it creates, your brain creates neural pathways. Once it sees a certain pattern, that's what's good. We call that learning, right? You see something happen and you create a neural pathway and you just follow it, right? And your brain just goes right there. And to create new neural pathways to relearn something or to change that requires resources. And we evolved to conserve resources. So everything in our DNA, everything is forcing us to not do the very thing that we need to do. And you have to kind of resist against that. And it's hard. So you have to, so the only way to overcome that is to bring it forward into your consciousness of saying, oh, my tendency will to keep doing the same thing over and over again without questioning the result or questioning. So therefore I need to systemize my process to then question it so I can reevaluate it and look at it again and try to, you know, in that way I can evaluate it and then, you know, make movement instead of like just being, you know, stuck in the rut forever. So, or just following the same neural pathway.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, I mean, this is a quite engaging conversation. I mean, I didn't think fast and focused was going to lead us down these paths, but I want to be cognizant of, you know, our time together and, you know, and focus on, be fast and focused. So we have other responsibilities, things we're doing. So again, Scott, I want to kind of close it up and say thanks again for the conversation. I'm enjoying these. I mean, you and I always have tended to sit around and, you know, chew the fat or wax philosophically. So I, you know, this is, it seems like just like playing around. So any last words, Scott?
I would just say that, like, just do the thing, like, you know, like a lot, I think it's really easy to do paralysis analysis. So I think that's probably where most people fall. I think if you really, especially people who would listen to this podcast, I think would fall on the more intelligent side, and then they would suffer from a lot of paralysis analysis or analysis paralysis. And so I would say, you know, be okay with making a mistake and learning and doing it that way, as opposed to trying to spend all your time on, researching and learning. Like, there's no learning like doing the thing.
Do something. Be fast about doing something. Yeah. Make haste slowly. Do get out there and do it. Don't, because obviously, make an informed decision, right? But don't just go out wildly. But take action. Do something. See what happens, and then adjust as needed. And some of that, I think, is also built into our own egos, right? Our own sort of fear of mistake, fear of failure, fear of all those things. I mean, we're all human. We want to avoid that because it seems painful. So, well, again, Scott, I mean, this is awesome. I was really thrilled to be here. So just to kind of sum up, you know, our fast and focus was our topic today. I think good conversation. I think we'll be back next week on another episode. Please subscribe. You can find us on YouTube and all your Spotify and all your other apps for podcasts. Again, this was brought to you by CAD Talk, and CAD, as I just mentioned, you can visit us at cadtalk.com. Looking to, you know, continue the podcast and eventually have guests, and really trying to have interesting conversations in that this niche that we are with, software and the intersection of software and manufacturing. Well, that's all for me, Scott. Anything else from you?
No, just a great time as usual. Looking forward to the next one.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Integrate Intelligently podcast from CAD Talk Software. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss future episodes. Video versions of the podcast will be available on CAD Talk's YouTube page, linked in the show notes. The Integrate Intelligently podcast is hosted by CAD Talk CEO Scott Brickler and CRO Jeff Brickler. Our producer is myself, marketing manager John Thomas. If you have a story you want to share on the podcast or you want to partner with us, let us know. Email marketing@cadtalk.com and be sure to mention podcast in the subject line.